This episode is brought to you by the 1-4 Group Incorporated, a leading supplier of innovative dormancy and sprout inhibiting products for the potato storage industry. They believe that sustainability is intrinsically linked with the concept of stewardship. 1-4 Group practices sustainability by helping farmers minimize product loss using their family of biocontrol products. Learn more at 1-4group.com.
Welcome to the Potato Field Podcast, the podcast for and about potato growers. I'm Zeke Jennings, editor of Spudman and the host of the podcast. Joining us today is a pair of brothers from Northwestern Washington, Connor and David Wallace of Wallace Farms. Welcome, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
I appreciate you guys coming on and appreciate your time. And let's start just with a little bit of background on Wallace Farms. How long have you guys been around, and what do you grow in the way of potatoes, and what other crops do you guys grow?
Yeah, sure. So the Wallaces came to the Skagit Valley in the late 1800s from Ireland. My grandpa Dick and Uncle George started the farm in the 1950s or so. My grandpa Dick was working at the local oil refinery during the night, and during the day he would come home and farm. So it was a pretty tough situation. He through a lot of hard work and perseverance, they made it into a pretty successful farm. They passed it down to my dad and my uncles, and we grow quite a few different things, mostly potatoes, but corn, other like cover crops and stuff like that.
To kind of piggyback on what Connor said, we primarily grow for fresh market. We don't grow a lot of processor spuds. So we grow your standard fresh market reds, whites, yellows, even some purples. And then obviously, every potato can't be beautiful. So we do sell some to regional processors and that sort of thing.
Okay. And are you conventional only, or are you also doing organic?
Yeah, we do organic as well. We usually do several hundred acres of organic.
Is that a long-term thing? Have you guys been doing organic very long?
Yeah, as long as I can remember. So at least, two decades, I think.
Let's talk a little bit about your region there in the Skagit Valley, which is north of Seattle. One of the more prominent growing regions of Washington, the Columbia Basin, which is more in the eastern central part. How does your region, what is the climate like? What is the soil like where you're at? And you are quite close to the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. I haven't been on any farms in the Columbia Basin. I did go to college in Walla Walla, and I think they're kind of similar climates over there. So over there, not a lot of topsoil, kind of tends to be sandier. And obviously the climate is a lot more arid. It's more kind of desert-like, I think. Over in the Skagit Valley, we actually have really rich topsoil, lots of loam and clay. And so the ground tends to hold moisture very well. We're at a very low elevation, so the water table is high. And we do get quite a bit of precipitation. In the summer, we still have really nice long days, and it's a really good growing environment for potatoes.
What's the growing season like as far as when do you typically plant, when do you typically harvest, and, because that you are pretty far north, but yet, you're close to the ocean. That can really make a big difference on what kind of climate you have.
It does, yeah. So we tend to begin planting in late April, early May, once the soil temperature gets high enough. And once the precipitation holds off enough for actually us to be able to get in the fields without getting stuck. So our growing season tends to go from May until August, and we start harvesting those early fields in late August. Once we do start harvesting, we try to get in and get out as quickly as possible, because when that rain does come, it becomes a big mess for us. We'll be hauling trucks with, track tractors and doing anything we can to not get stuck. So we try to do things in as short a period of time as possible because of that rainfall.
Anything else you can share in the way of the rotational crops that you are fans of, or any kind of cover crops that you tend to lean on?
Yeah, good question. Should have my dad on the podcast because we were just talking about this yesterday. He's trying a few new things. As Connor said, Field corn is one that we do a fair amount of. We do quite a bit of grass. And so, you know, we're making hay sometimes. We're experimenting a little bit with alfalfa as a rotational crop. And then we do grow some grains, and we're working with some with a local grain mill here in the valley called Karen Spring Mills, which is a pretty cool local mill as well. We used to grow more peas and carrots, things like that, for processing. But that the local outfit that was taking a lot of those from us has since moved away, and so we haven't been growing as much of those rotationally.
Yeah, alfalfa is a really popular rotational crop here in Michigan, where I'm at. I think most of the chip growers also grow alfalfa. So I'll be interested to hear. I'd love to follow up with you guys and see how you like alfalfa.
Yeah.
Let's get a little bit more of your individual backgrounds. You guys are both young guys. What was it like growing up on a farm? Did you know you wanted to stay in ag? And what was your journey like to go, you know, growing up and go off to college and kind of find your way back?
Connor, you should take that.
Yeah. Okay. I'll start. So it was a really cool way to grow up. I think it was really cool to, you know, work during the summers and make money. I always knew what I was doing every summer. And tractor driving is actually a pretty useful skill, it turns out. Not a lot of people get to do it, especially when you go to college and you meet other people that, you know, did other stuff, worked in coffee shops or whatever. I've always known that the farm would be a part of my life. And for me, one of the things that, David and I grew up with was, you know, my dad and my family wanted us to be able to go and get an education as well. I think it was important for them to see us go as far as we could with our brains. And I went and I got a physics degree. And the other thing that I was really into when I was a kid was computers. And David was too. We loved building computers. I went off and I learned how to program and I worked at a few different startups. But the farm has always been something that I knew I wanted to contribute to in some way. And so it's been a big, it's been a really cool thing discovering for myself. What does that look like? How do I get to do both of those things at the same time? Both like program and help out the farm. So I've always known that I wanted to do something with the farm. And so it's been a pretty cool journey for me.
Where'd you go to school? What college?
I went to Reed College in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And wow, that's an interesting degree. Was there a lot of other farmers on campus that you were aware of?
not really, Zeke. There was it was a really different experience for me. Like, you know, I grew up in Bow, Washington, a pretty rural area. And for me, Portland, Oregon was the big city. It was definitely the most populous place I had spent any time. Being a farmer it was a pretty liberal college as well. I was definitely one of the odd people out. But, you know, you get to learn a lot from that. And I never would have gotten like a cool physics degree, you know, like it was so cool to be able to do both of those things, if that makes sense. Yeah.
Hey, David, how about you? What was your background? Where'd you go to school?
Yeah, obviously, it's similar to Connor. Grew up working on the farm every summer. I ended up going to Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, and I studied chemistry while I was there. After I finished up, I honestly didn't know what I wanted to do. The farm is always a strong pull for me. And so immediately after college, I went and I worked for a full year, on the farm, and really enjoyed it. But it was sort of made clear to me that, that I needed to have a backup career because farming is a difficult industry, as you know. And so, I needed to have something else if farming didn't work out long term. And so I ended up applying to graduate school in chemistry. And one of the things I wrote about in my application essay was how I would use this education to make an impact on the food industry, specifically on agriculture. And so while I was in grad school working on magnets and superconductors and things like that, that didn't really seem like what I was doing at the time. But then as I transitioned after graduate school into data science and working at Amazon, I was still continuing to kind of feel that pull from the farm. And I wanted to figure out a way to apply my technical skills to agriculture. So I ended up after 4 years at Amazon, quitting and saying, I'm going to go back to the family farm and I'm going to find a way to make an impact. And so, initially that was just relearning how to do things on the farm after 5 or 6 years away. And, but then, kind of quickly we found a problem to work on together, that would use both of our technical skills and our knowledge of the farm.
Yeah. That's a couple of, chemistry and ag. Yeah. You could see the correlation, yeah. But then you got physics and ag, which maybe not quite as much. And you got David that worked in the big tech at Amazon. That's not a background you hear in agriculture very often. How did those experiences translate to ag? And how did you guys kind of put your brains together to come up with some new ideas on how to do things?
Ooh. Yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe some of my experiences, so I worked at a couple different tech companies. I worked for a company called Granular, which was bought by DuPont when I was there. So working for, ag tech, I got to learn a lot about how tech approaches kind of agriculture and providing like new tech solutions for farmers. And I learned a ton, and they're doing some really amazing things. One thing I noticed is that sometimes in the ag tech business world, it seems like, the products that they're making aren't really meeting farmers where they're at. So I think when you offer a farmer the ability to turn off a pump with the click of a button, I think that is like so impactful for them. Whereas I was making lots of dashboards at, in some of my other ag tech company jobs, calculating derivatives and providing some of the software just didn't feel as impactful. I think that's the short answer, is that I just felt like I wanted to, seeing this stuff, I knew I could help because I had these technical skills, but the ways that I saw the help coming out wasn't impacting people like my cousins or my dad in the way that I knew it could. And so that's one of the reasons why, David and I are working together.
And David, what did Amazon and chemistry, when you got back to the farm, and you mentioned having to relearn things, did you guys come up with any new, ideas? Did leaving and coming back with a fresh set of eyes open anything up? And what have you guys been doing to kind of bring that out?
Yeah. So my career at Amazon was, I was a data scientist. And so when I was thinking about coming back to the farm and back to agriculture, I was thinking, how can I build the next cool machine learning model? Or how can I leverage a huge global imaging data set to solve some cool problem? And when I went back to the farm, what I immediately realized was just how many day-to-day problems there are that can use some kind of technical assistance, basic coding skills, basic ability to build hardware, that kind of thing. So what Connor was saying was, he felt like there's a disconnect between what big tech is doing for agriculture and what the farmer needs on a day-to-day basis. And I definitely saw that coming back because, I was out carrying irrigation pipe around and I was driving tractors and dealing with equipment. And so that increasingly became the type of problem that I was more interested in. How do we make the day-to-day life of people like us easier with technology? And so, kind of jumping ahead, the way we started working on this problem really was, my dad said, hey, can you build a system that will automatically turn off our irrigation when the irrigation reel finishes its run? And so Connor and I kind of got together and nights and weekends started working on that. So that's kind of how how we got into this whole thing. We did not set out with one particular grand vision in mind. We just wanted to work on a problem that would make a difference on the farm immediately.
Do you struggle with black spot or pressure bruise in your potato crop? The proven biocontrol 1-4 site helps increase deliverables to your shed or plant by reducing the severity and indices of bruise. Incorporate 1-4 site into your existing storage program for unprecedented success. Learn more at 1-4group.com. And now back to the podcast.
And that being Coda Farm Technologies is actually the company that you guys got together with, you know, the family, the two of you are really spearheading it, of creating some new tech advancements, and the automatic irrigation stop was essentially the first step. Could you expand a little bit on what do you have in the way of technology and what it can do?
So actually, I'll kind of back it up. One of the things that I didn't mention about Skagit Valley is all of our fields are broken up into pretty small rectangular pieces. And so modern irrigation technologies like center pivots that are fully automated, we can't really have. There are one or two in the valley where there's an especially large tract of land where you can have a center pivot. And that's, you know, really nice if you can have it. But we rely on primarily sprinkler reels to irrigate our crops. And we have a whole variety of them on the farm. I think we have probably five different kinds and a whole bunch of different kinds of pumps as well. And we're all constantly interchanging them. And so those have almost no remote control or remote monitoring whatsoever. And so we were constantly having this problem where, you know, either the motor would pop out of gear or a rock would get stuck in the turbine on the reel and the reel would come to a stop, but the water would not. And so we have this huge flood in our field. You could see this semicircle where the ground had been compacted and the, you know, the spuds had been soaked, the vines were smashed down. And so we wanted to build a way to prevent that from ever happening again. So the solution that Connor and I came up with was pretty simple. It was just a cellular unit on the reel that tracks the motion of that reel and makes sure it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. And then another cellular unit on the pump that can receive signals from that that reel in the case of when the reel stops. So initially it was just a really simple system, a way to send a signal from one reel to one pump and shut it down automatically. And we used that on our farm for a season and found that it was incredibly effective, not just from preventing accidental stoppage, but also just from being able to see what your equipment is doing just by opening up your smartphone. We found that it really saves us a lot of time and our employees a lot of time because they're no longer having to drive around and look at their reels, make sure they're doing what they're doing. They get that information right in the palm of their hand. And so we felt that it was a pretty important thing for farmers to have and something that didn't exist in the market. And so we decided to kind of build on it from there.
How long did this whole process take to come up with and write all this code and get the from the idea to where, you know, you're actually putting it out in your field?
Yeah. Connor, you want to take that one? I mean,
yeah, sure. First year, we went out and we made like a small prototype had it working on how many devices was it? Just it was like three or four, just cobbled together. It was just a small, like a breadboard that was soldered together, basically, a couple of those out there. And, as a proof of concept, and once we knew that that was working, then this last year we made our own, circuit boards and we got together with a couple other local farmers and partnered with them. And we did our first, you know, full trial run with a couple different people. And the success that we built on that year is what we're building on this next year. So going out into a more general outreach now, I suppose.
So to answer your first question, building the first prototypes was like a 3-month process. We worked on the circuit boards, but then Connor and I also coded all the like cloud infrastructure that you need. We have, you have to have a database, you have to have a server that accepts the messages, you have to have, you know, ways to interpret what's coming off of the reel and off the pump and coordinate all that stuff. So it took us about 3 months until we were able to test it on the farm for that summer.
Now, is a like a good Wi-Fi signal kind of key in this? Is it for some of the other, you know, field monitoring stuff?
Yeah, no, so ours is entirely cellular. So anywhere your smartphone works, this will work. And from our experience, that's pretty much everywhere that we grow. It uses 4G LTE technology, but it can fall back to 3G if there's no LTE network available. We were seeing that there are some solutions out there for switching that just use a radio signal. But that's pretty challenging because often our pump can be over a mile away from the reel. And so communication isn't good. And also you're constantly interchanging reels with pumps. And so we had to have a way of pairing them together interchangeably. So the solution that we built with cellular and with a server made that whole process really simple, and communication can happen basically at, you know, anywhere in the world. You could technically have a pump in Europe that's paired to a reel over here in Washington State, and it would work just fine.
Wow, that's great. Anything in the way of kind of short-term goals for, you know, what you want to do with this company or long-term goals? I mean, where do you see this going? Anything on your agenda?
Yeah, lots on the agenda. Yeah. Short-term goals, as Connor mentioned, you know, we are entering our first actual sales push to get this out to farmers in the United States. We would like to be on 50 farms throughout the United States by the end of this summer. We've already committed a pretty good chunk of that. And it's across all crop types, actually. We have sod farmers who want this for their reels that they use on sod. Here in Washington, we have, just in the valley, we have spinach seed farmers, for example, who use this on their spinach. And we're even talking to a potato farmer up in New York next week. So that's our short-term goal. But long-term, I don't know, Connor, you want to talk about long-term?
Yeah. We have a lot of different things that we'd like to do. What is really exciting is just how kind of modular this device is. You know, the reel and the pump solution is definitely what we're focusing on now. But there are so many different tasks that on a farm that require a guy to go out and like look at a pump, for instance, look at a gauge on a pump. And, you know, depending on where that pump is, it's 30 minutes away. That also wouldn't tell you, maybe if you're looking at the pressure or you're looking at a gauge, you wouldn't know historically how high the pressure was, how much water you used or stuff like that. There are so many different applications like that on farms that really take a lot of time out of people's day and that we can really tackle. What is really cool is that this device really works for pretty much out of the box for those applications. Looking evaluating those other things that we can do for people. I think the other cool and exciting things that we can do are I think I'm pretty surprised at how common the, mobile reel and pump application is for farms. I'm starting to get the impression that, you know, it seems like a lot of farms have at least one of them. The other thing is, you know, internationally, this is a huge problem as well. And so there are so many cool problems for us to look at in this space and so many directions we can expand in. It's really just more about choosing which ones to go for.
I love how you put that. Cool problems. We don't often think of problems as cool, but I love your enthusiasm about it. So David, anything else to add on you know, gaps in technology or anything that you guys would, you know, see this going to, or is it just a matter of deciding what you want to do?
No, I mean, we actually do have some pretty concrete goals for things that we want to achieve. Connor was alluding earlier to kind of the disconnect between what big tech is building for farmers and what they actually need. And so there are lots of crop sensing solutions out there that are being implemented, things that use, for example, satellite imagery to show you the NDVI of your crops at a given time, or crop sensors that estimate evapotranspiration and water stress, for example, or, you know, connected weather stations that tell you when you're at risk of frost, that kind of thing. The issue with those right now is that they give you this really rich data set, but they're not prescriptive in any way, and they're certainly not able to take action for you. And so what we're going to be doing in the future is taking this ability to take action on something, whether it's an irrigation system or whether it's a wind machine for, like, you know, a grape crop or something like that, and giving the farmer a way to respond to that data input and take action automatically. So, for example, if you find out that your crop is at risk of frost in a certain area, that wind machine should turn on automatically, and you should know that it's on. You should be able to check and confirm that and turn it off. With irrigation, if you find that your crop is experiencing water stress in a certain location, you should be able to easily have a way of turning your irrigation on in response to that, and knowing that it's on and having it turn off automatically as well. So, you know, in the short term, we're focused on getting this problem of the irrigation reel really correct. And we're building out some really neat tools for farmers that do use irrigation reels. So, for example, you can see what the flow rate is at your gun, and you can estimate actually how much water you're applying based on that flow rate and based on how quickly you're retracting the gun. So you'll be able to see how much water you've applied to every portion of your field, which is kind of previously something that was reserved only for, you know, highly automated center pivots and stationary systems. But long-term, we're going to be looking toward automating and just really taking action proactively for farmers versus providing like this huge rich data set that they act on themselves.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, there are some of these, you know, huge center pivots that are starting to come out that have this technology to be able to do it in the small scale, you know, for smaller fields. And I know that's, you know, they have that back east a lot where the fields are small and they have a different plots, you know, all over the place. So, you know, that's great that you guys have been able to take that technology and provide it in a different way than it has been before. So, guys, that's probably a good place to wrap up our conversation. I really appreciate your time and coming on. And again, one more thing I wanted to ask before you go is, why did you pick the name CODA? C-O-D-A.
Yeah. This is silly, actually. We needed to file with the Washington Secretary of State our business as quickly as possible, and we didn't want to spend a lot of time on naming a company, so we figured out a way to smash our two names together. Believe it or not, I did briefly consider the name COVID, which turned out to be not a great name to choose. So I'm glad we chose CODA. It is just Connor and David squished together. So there you go, CODA Farm Technologies.
COVID would have been, I mean, talk about, what a mess that would have been. So, guys, thanks so much. Yeah, that's Connor and David Wallace, again, from Skagit Valley in northwestern Washington, and CODA Farm Technologies. Guys, thanks again for being here. I really appreciate it. And best wishes with your growing season this year and your new tech business.
Thanks, Zeke.
Thanks, Zeke. Good to meet you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And thanks again to One4 Group, our sponsor. Be sure to go check them out at one4group.com. We'll see you next time.